This is Comic Picks by the Glick.
Hey, I'm your host, Jason Glick.
Hey, Jason, what do you have on tap for us today?
Well, it's like I'm talking about like a couple of graphic novels that, you know, like go together that I recently got in the mail like a little while ago. It's like, well, because, you know, it's like, well, I tend to like sleep on stuff like a little bit just because, you know, hey, I follow trade paperbacks. So you're just going to like, you're not going to read about like the new like single issue stuff. You're just going to like get the stuff I read when I talk about the collections, and sometimes it's gonna like fall like a month or so behind, you know, when they actually come out, depending on, you know, how things go and how things actually ship to me. But then there's like the stuff that, you know, like I didn't actually bother with like the first time around, the second time around, or the third time around, but you know, maybe the fourth or fifth time, that's the right time to do it. And that's kind of like the subject we've got here, which is like, you know, these two graphic novels by a couple of creators who, you know, like made, like apparently like did really great work together, and then, you know, took a while to like finally like, you know, reconnect and do their next graphic novel project together, or no, serialized comic book story, because like both of these collections were originally serialized as in single issue form before they were collected in graphic novels. And this is the long way around of saying that I'm talking about two graphic novels from writer Joe Kelly and artist Ken Nemura. First of which being their seminal I Kill Giants. This is a series that came out back in the mid-aughts when Kelly was best known for his work on Deadpool, showing that, hey, you know, the Merc with the Mouth actually could sustain his own solo title, and actually, and it could actually be good as well. Who'd have thunk? And, you know, that's something that's paid dividends in the years since. And also his work on Action Comics over in the DC, which basically did a good job, like, you know, keeping Superman relevant in the face of, like, you know, the advent of, like, you know, uber edgy teams like the Authority. So but the thing is, like, you know, he was a guy who was just known for superhero work. And so when this series came out, it was kind of took everyone by surprise in the sense that, you know, hey, here's someone who's like done like a lot of like, you know, irreverent, quasi-violent superhero work, and then doing something like, you know, completely different. Basically a grounded story that, you know, that kind of dances back and forth between what is real and what is not, as it focuses on like a protagonist who was an outlier, like, you know, for the time, and arguably still is in mainstream comic space, elementary school girl, and also working with an artist who no one had ever heard of, but arguably, like, you know, knocked out of the park here, because I Kill Giants is a story of one fifth grader named Barbara Thorson, who doesn't fit in. When we're introduced to her, it's like, you know, she's basically, like, you know, like poo-pooing on the idea of one of a fellow student whose dad is coming in as a motivational speaker, and he's just like, you know, trying to get the class hyped up, and she's just like not buying this at all. And so when he tries to, like, you know, like, it's like, say, like, you know, what's your deal? It's like I hunt giants, I kill giants, and you're kind of just wondering, like, you know, what is this girl's deal? And like, she just, you know, maintains this aura of like confidence and defiance when she's sent to the principal's office, when she's home, you know, dealing with her strung out sister, who's, you know, like left to like manage, watch over her and her brother. It's like, and as she's also just, you know, managing a D&D session with her brother and his friends. It's like, and doing it with, like, you know, like appreciably nihilistic skill for a dungeon master. I've known one or two at least. And also just, like, you know, but at the same time, though, you're kind of wondering, just, you know, what's going through her head, because, like, you know, there's clearly something that, like, that's, like, you know, bothering her, but, you know, she can't, that she's not, like, but she's not really articulate about beyond the fact that, you know, she, that the whole, like, you know, she kills giants bit earlier on, and then, you know, things take a fantastic twist early at the end of the issue when we see all these, you know, like, creatures like around her in the, it's like in the, like in the, like in the Long Island riverfront scenery at the into the first issue. So you're kind of wondering, like, well, wait a second. Maybe she's not crazy. Maybe she does kill giants and she, and like no one else is believe her, because, you know, that's, you know, hey, we're still dealing with, like, you know, comic books here. I think that's still a very valid viewpoint here. And that's kind of like the angle that Kelly and Nimura take, like, through a good portion of this, like, of this series. Like, you know, is Barbara, you know, like, actually a genuine giant killer, or is she just a, you know, disturbed little girl who's, you know, running from something very real, living it in, like, in her home? It's like, and even though it's like, you know, I think, like, the series, like, you know, has its, like, you know, like, flaws, like, it does kind of read like, hey, you know, like approaching middle-aged guy writes young girl dialogue, that's kind of weird, because it doesn't quite hit, it's like, hit right. It's like, and it's like, and it's like, and it just kind of feels, you know, like a little bit stilted, it's like, at times. But it's like, you are kind of wondering, you know, what's really going on here. It's like, and, but, like, it's so that kind of mystery, like, does draw you in, but it also, like, draws you in the sense of, like, you know, just, like, you know, what's, you know, like how messy things really get, like, how he's willing to, like, you know, how, both creators are willing to go, like, you know, deep into, like, how screwed up, Barbara's home life is, not just her home life, but her, also her, how her home life bleeds into her school life, and how she's, you know, she's the weirdo at school, and that leads to her being picked on by the bully. It's like, and how she, and even though she fights back, you know, like, this is still, like, a big, strong girl who's just, like, you know, like, not about to crumple in front of just, like, you know, like, marginal resistance. It's like, but then there's also, like, you know, the new girl in, it's like, in school, Sophie, who does kind of, like, you know, like, see this, like, you know, weirdo next door and thinks, like, hey, you know, it's like, maybe I would like to know, like, you know, what's going on in her mind. So there's, like, there's all this, like, struggle right here. It's not just, you know, like, you know, how much Barbara's life sucks. It's like, and how she has to deal with it by retreating into a fantasy life, but also just, you know, how, like, there are people who do want to help her, like her new friend, like her sister, and also, like, the school counselor, whose work is arguably cut out for her. It's like, cause, like, she's dealing with, like, you know, like, someone who just, like, does not trust her as well, but she's giving it her best. And things, like, really just and it's also kind of interesting to, like, observe how things keep going back and forth between just, you know, like, her, what's going on in her, it's like, in the real world, and also how Barbara perceives the world as well. It's like, and just how, you know, things come to a crux, like, in the last couple of issues, when you know, the giants actually do start showing up, and you're just kind of wondering, like, you know, well, maybe she wasn't as crazy as we thought. And then at the end, when, you know, like, not to give anything away, but I think that, you know, the ending it gets does feel earned. And, like, for all its warts, it's like, and they think things that, you know, like, didn't read right in the first place, and maybe haven't aged quite as well. It's like, it does, like, deliver, like, an appreciably emotional finale that I think is worth checking out. It's like, I mean, I got the 15th anniversary edition of this series, so, like, the fact that they're still reissuing this comic 15 years after the fact, you know, should tell you something right there. And I will say that, you know, I appreciate all the extras that they included here, which, you know, like, there's a lot of, like, you know, I mean, there's the standard stuff, like, you know, the cover galleries, but also the afterwards and commentary from Kelly and Nimura talking about that, you know, how they, like how they worked upon, like, the character designs for the characters, and also just, you know, like, they're talking about how the series has found, like, an international audience as well, which is really kind of impressive, like, for, like, an independent American comic book. And also the fun one page bits where Nimura and Kelly talk about their creative relationship in a deeply irreverent fashion. It's good. It's like, it's fun. It's like, and if you're going to read only one comic from this, like, from this podcast, this would be it. And also, I do want to say that, you know, It's like, you know, well, I think like it's quite well written overall. The art from Nimura is really, it's like it's still really distinctive. Like he's got a scratchy impressionistic style that, it's like that, you know, it's not all about just like, you know, drawing everything, but just, you know, capturing the emotion, like, and like the, like, and just like the overall, like, you know, impression and style. And sell a particular scene. It's like he's good at drawing the grounded stuff and the really fantastic stuff as well, which, you know, it's like it's a couple of extremes right there, but, you know, it's like he pulls it off quite well when you're going between those two extremes. And, you know, it's like after this series, you know, hit well, it's like hit really big back when it came out. Like in, oh man, when was it originally published? It's like, what does it say here? What does it say here? Damn it, I can't remember. Let's just say 2008 or so, because it came out in the 15th anniversary edition came out last year. So there you go. So you think that, you know, hey, you know, it's like after this hit and, you know, like, garnered a bunch of awards, a lot of buzz, like lots of sales, and even a movie that came out in 2008 with a script by Kelly. You think that, you know, hey, shouldn't they just, you know, like hit it off again and just, you know, like do like, you know, more like works on like, you know, like from the team that brought you I Kill Giants? Well, no, that's not actually what happened. It's like what did happen almost 15 years later was the fact that was their next collaboration, that is Immortal Sergeant. It's like it took them a while to do it, but, you know, they finally did another one, and, well, is it as good? No, it's not. Is it still worth reading? Yes, but it kind of depends on your tolerance for a specific kind of story, because, well, things have changed a lot since Days of I Kill Giants. And it's not that they're trying to mine the same type of a ground right here. This isn't a story where you've got, like, you know, like someone trying to, like, you know, determine, like, you know, what is, like, going between what is real and what is not. This is a story that is very much grounded in, you know, relatable human drama. Specifically, cop drama. And if you think, like, oh, cop drama, wow, it's like, you know, cops have, like, had an interesting last couple of years, you know, it's like, and yeah, yes, they have. And that's kind of the problem here, because this is probably like a series that would have read a lot better. It's like, had it come out in, like, in the golden age of, like, you know, characters who, who did bad things, like, you know, for what they believe was the right reasons. Like, in the golden age of, say, like, The Shield, you know, that's when the series would have read really well without a second thought. But what I'm getting at here is that Immortal Sergeant is a story about, like, it refers to, like, one Detective Sergeant, Jim Sergeant, yes, Detective Sergeant, Sergeant, who, it's like, he's just about to retire. And, like, he's just, you know, not looking forward to it because, like, he just loves being a cop, or, you know, he's totally committed to the idea of being a cop, and he just doesn't want to, like, you know, stop doing this, even though, like, he's being, like, you know, pushed out because of his age. But, on the eve of his retirement, though, it's his family is coming down to, like, to support him in this. That means his ex-wife, who divorced him and remarried a woman, and also his son Michael, who he just kind of like reveres as a spoiled little wimpy man child, and he just like loves nothing more than just, you know, like poke at him, just like remind him how much of a wuss he is, and it's like, and like, even though, like, you know, Michael is not looking forward to this, like, his wife is really not looking forward to this. The kids love him, though, obviously. But, but the thing is, like, you know, Michael just, like, realizes, like, you know, he's my dad. I've got to put up with him. And, you know, follows his dad to this bar, it's like when he's out on, like, a, it's like a, It's like on a bender one night. It's like, you know, he just kind of, you know, wants to, like, you know, try and get some answers from him. But then that's when Jim sees this one guy that he's been looking for decades. This one guy who can lead him to the guy who was responsible for this one, like, unclosed case that he had regarding the death of an infant, like, early in his career, that he has never let go and wants to solve by whatever means necessary. And when I say by whatever means necessary, I mean, yes, like, extrajudicially kill him, because that's what he feels like that he can do. So Jim, you know, does his best to gaslight his son and thinking that he needs him. It's like, you know, and tries and, like, you know, bring gets him to come along with him on this trip to Atlanta to take this guy out. So basically what we've got here is a story of a cop who is, like, you know, very rude, very vulgar, arguably homophobic, definitely more than a little racist, but he's trying to, like, you know, solve this one last case before retirement. And it's seeing him, seeing Jim spew off his, speak his mind and voice his opinions. It's meant to be, it feels like it's very meant to be, like, you know, edgy and transgressive. Just like the kind of thing, like, you know, like, you hear this, you know, like, you know, you don't say this shit anymore. Or, like, as Michael puts it, you know, this is why they want to defund the police, because of all the stuff you're saying right now. And, yeah, it's like, I mean, they're not wrong. And, you know, it's like, but at the same time, though, I can really kind of tell, like, this, like, see, like, the kind of story that we're, that Kelly and Nimura want to tell here. That's, you know, about a man who's just, you know, been, you know, like poisoned by the commitments of his job, like, to try and, like, you know, do, like, take things out in the best way that he can. And, like I said, if he can look past that stuff, that just idea that, you know, hey, it's a bad man trying to do the right thing, like, for a reason and in ways that are just, you know, more than a little fucked up, then yeah, it's like, you're gonna enjoy it. And I think the story itself, it's like, is well told. It's like, in the sense that, you know, like, there's a lot of, like, there's all this struggle and back and forth between, like, you know, how Michael tries to, like, make his points, his point of view felt towards his dad, and how, like, you know, Jim tries to, you know, like, you know, just basically, like, you know, run roughshod over it, but also just, you know, realize that, you know, maybe, like, he might be wrong here. Maybe there's, like, his way is maybe not the right way, but yeah, you gotta be willing to look past a lot of bullshit to get to that point. And even then, though, it's like, I think that the real issue with the story they're trying to tell here is that you want to have, like, a story where this guy, like, this bad man, like, who's got all these human problems, and that in the end, you know, you want to say he does the right thing, but it's not really, like, the right thing. It's basically just, like, you know, the not bad thing. I mean, just, like in the end, like, you know, he stops and he, because, like, you know, he doesn't do it because, you know, okay, that makes him not a terrible person, but it just, like, it kind of means, like, you know, he stops digging, like, this awful hole he's built for himself, but doesn't actually, like, show him trying to, like, fill it back up as well. Like, the story does kind of let him off the hook without showing him that he's trying to, like, you know, be a genuinely better person after this. And I can imagine, like, there's probably a lot of people who are going to look at this and go, nah, that doesn't work. But there you go. It's like, I don't know. It's like, I don't think it's a bad story. It's like, I enjoyed reading it, and it's probably going to sit on my shelf for a good long while, until shelf space basically dictates, do I want to keep this on my shelf, or do I want to keep, say, what else do I got here? What would be a good one volume thing? Oh, Sullinan. Is it going to be this or Sullinan on my shelf? And then it's going to be Sullinan, obviously. But overall, it's like, I think it's a good story for, like, you know, if you want, like, a bad cop doing bad things for the right reasons type story. But so it's entertaining, if nothing else. It's like told competently, and you know, it's like I think that, you know, like Kelly and Nimura still work pretty well as a team right here. And I like seeing like the evolution of Nimura's style, in the sense that, you know, like while like his work in I Kill Giants was like really sketchy and raw, this one feels like a lot more like refined and polished. Like it's still like this work of the same artist, but you know, just like, you know, in a different way, and just like, and it helps communicate the like everything that's being told here, like, you know, quite well overall. And also, I definitely appreciate the copious amounts of making of materials that they included here, because I mean, if nothing else, I would have appreciated the lengthy afterword from Joe Kelly, because it basically, like, you know, gives a lot of context to the story he's trying to tell here. And even if I don't think he quite, you know, gets that across, I get the feeling that, you know, this is a story that he was trying to tell, you know, in order like to help like reconcile his like complicated relationship with his dad, who was also a cop, who also had, you know, one major thing in common with the protagonist here. And then, but then you've also got like a lot of talk with Nimura about his process and in trying to find the right character designs, like for Michael and Jim. It's like, and even better still, it's like, you know, there are like, you know, like storyboards for scenes that they were planning on including, but they didn't. And actual cut scenes from the comic itself, which, you know, you just don't see, period. Man, it's like, I can't remember, like, I have to like rack my brain for a bit to like realize, like, remember the last time I saw like, a comic that actually included, like, you know, like scenes that they, you know, they worked on and then decided, nope, we're not going to put this in here because it's just like it ruins the pacing. But I appreciate them including it here. It's just because, like, you know, one of the cut scenes is another one of Jim's stories, which, you know, are very off color, arguably in bad taste, but are still very entertaining and deeply, darkly comic. It's like in their own unique way. So yeah, it's like if you're in the mood for this kind of story, then yeah, it's like it's gonna deliver. I just want you to know that, you know, not everything is going to hit the way it is. The creators probably intended, but I still enjoyed it overall. But really, it's like if you're gonna buy one of these two graphic novels, it's gonna be I Kill Giants, because it's the one that, you know, still feels like it still has like a real genuine emotional impact, and that's still saying something after 15 years and all. So kudos to them, and here's hoping it doesn't take another 15 years for them to do their next work, because, you know, these guys, you know, they clearly work well together, and I want to see what they do next, sooner rather than later.
Yep. So, sounds pretty good. Do you know what you're going to be talking about next time?
Funny you should mention that, because it turns out that, you know, at the time, what would seem unlikely that I have an idea at the time that I'm writing this, it turns out that, you know, a conclusion to a series I've been reading for a little while is going to drop in the next couple weeks. So, hey, so assuming everything goes well, come back next time to hear my thoughts on the finale of the second Metabaron cycle, or not. Well, hopefully, like, things will go well enough that you will. There you go.
All right. Sounds good. We'll catch you next time on Comic Picks by the Glick.
Right. Laters.